next generation the praiseworthy deeds of the Lord, his power, and the wonders he has done. He decreed statutes for Jacob and established the law in Israel, which he commanded our ancestors to teach their children, so that the next generation would know them, even the children yet to be born, and they in turn would tell their children. Then they would put their trust in God and would not forget his deeds, but would keep his commands. They would not be like their ancestors, a stubborn and rebellious generation, whose hearts were not loyal to God, whose spirits were not faithful to him.
Today we come to the end of our series, thinking about family life. We've seen that as a church family, we should be those that relate well across different nationalities. We've seen that we as a church family should be those who work together, whether singled or married. We've thought as a church about what it looks like to care well and to learn from those who are older. We've thought as a church family about what it looks like to value those with disabilities in our midst. And today we're thinking about what it looks like as a church together to raise the next generation. And that word together is really important. See, the way that the next generation are raised is not as we just leave parents to do their thing. We'll see that parents have a really important role biblically. We'll unpack that in a minute. But it's not just for parents and for the rest of us to just watch on. It's not even for parents and Sunday school leaders and for the rest of us to watch on. Actually, it's a responsibility for all of us. Because there is a scenario that can happen, that could happen, that we all fear. That scenario is described for us in Judges chapter 2. So we, in our mornings, have been working our way through Deuteronomy. As we've worked our way through Deuteronomy, we've seen that this generation grows up, this generation that are about to enter the land. And as that generation comes up, there's another generation that comes after them. See, the generation that enter the land, they are meant to tell the next generation about the Lord, but they don't. And so you get to Judges chapter 2, and this is what it says. This is the problem in Judges chapter 2. It says, after that whole generation had been gathered to their ancestors, that's the generation that kind of entered the land that we've seen in Deuteronomy, another generation grew up who knew neither the Lord nor what he had done for Israel. Then the Israelites did what was evil in the eyes of the Lord and served the Baals. They forsook the Lord, the God of their ancestors, who'd brought them out from Egypt. They followed and worshipped various gods of the peoples around them. See what happens? When one generation doesn't tell the next generation about the Lord and about the things he's done, the scenario that occurs is the next generation don't know the Lord, and so, because they don't know the Lord, they follow other gods. That's the danger, that's the problem that was there for us in the beginning of the book of Judges. That is always a theoretical risk for the church. You see, the church is only ever one generation away from dying out. That's not a particularly pessimistic outlook just because of how Christianity seems to be going in our country, but that's just always the reality. The church is only ever one generation away from dying out. That is, if we as the global church do not tell any of the next generation about the Lord and about the things he's done, how are they going to know? Now, obviously, we trust that God, by his Spirit, will work to bring his people to him. But humanly speaking, the church is only ever one generation from dying out. But the Bible doesn't just give us that problem like it had in the book of Judges, but it gives us the solution, and we saw it in Psalm 78. See, in Psalm 78, we are told to tell the next generation. The Israelite community say, we will tell the next generation about who God is and about what he's done, so that the next generation will know. And not just the next generation. You see, by the end of that section, it's the children yet to be born as well. And that those would then tell the generation after them. See, God's plan for his gospel advancing involves each generation telling the next generation. It is not God reveals himself to one generation And then he'll reveal himself afresh to the generation after that, and afresh to the generation after that. God's plan for how the generations down the ages will be reached is as one generation passes on what they've known of the Lord to the generation that follows. That is what solves that problem that Judges 2 sets up for us. Notice it's we together will tell the next generation. What is going on in this psalm doesn't seem to be each parent saying, I will tell my kids. It's we as a community commit to telling the next generation of our community about these things. We together tell the next generation together. How that works out, I think, works in kind of four concentric circles. We'll see those as we work through our material. Because as the African proverb says, it takes a village to raise a child. The reality is, Christianly speaking, it takes a church to raise a child. It is not for a parent to raise a child and the church to just kind of watch on and provide a meal occasionally. It's more than that. It takes a church to raise a child. As we think about that, here's a couple of encouragements. A survey was done of Christians. 56% of Christians in our country became a Christian before they were 11. 75% of Christians became a Christian before they were 18. Firstly, praise God for the 25% who become a Christian after that. But secondly, what a wonderful opportunity we have with those who are 18 and under to share the deeds of the Lord, to share who he is and what he's done. Because by God's grace, generation after generation, it seems to be that that is where most people come to know Jesus. So that's what we're going to be thinking about. How is it that we as a church raise the next generation together? Four concentric circles. The circle at the center, parents. That is God's plan, with has parents at the center. See, in Deuteronomy 6, which we saw a few weeks ago in the morning, we saw that there was that command for Israel to listen. Then they were given a truth. The Lord our God, the Lord is one. Then they were given a command. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. And that truth and that command are not just to be left with that generation who hear. No, those things are to be impressed on their children. And that is their children, kind of the parents and their direct children. Those parents are to talk with their children when they're at home and when they walk along the road, when you lie down, when you get up. Those obviously aren't the limited only times. The point is, at home or walking on the road is basically the only two places people are. When you lie down and when you get up, the beginning and the end of the day, bracketing, saying all the time, this is what the job of the parent is to do. The job of the parent is to, amidst the normal, amidst the day-to-day, amidst the run-of-the-mill chaos of family life, we are to pass on the things of the Lord to the next generation. To do it in the day-to-day. And it's not just something that comes up in the Old Testament. See, Ephesians 6 repeats this idea for us. Fathers, or maybe better, parents, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. See, the job of a parent is not primarily to raise a functioning member of society, although we're all aiming for at least that. It's not primarily about investing in the academic success of your children. It's not primarily about making your children into the best at whatever their hobby is. Primarily, the job of a parent is to raise their children in the training and instruction of the Lord. Parents, if you're a parent here this afternoon, that is your duty, that is your first calling as a parent, to raise your children in the training and instruction of the Lord. How does that work out in the day-to-day of life? Then we've seen from Deuteronomy 6 that it's meant to kind of just be as part of daily life. How that will look will drastically change depending on the age of your kids. But it's in the little things. You're walking with your child, you know, taking them to school, and it's a lovely day. And rather than just stopping and saying, isn't it a great sunny day? Isn't God kind to us to give us sun when it's a horrible rain day? Isn't God kind to give us rain so that the plants can grow? It's as you're doing, you know, as your kid has come back from the hobby that they've really enjoyed, and you say to them, you know, let's say it's a sport. Isn't God kind to give us bodies that mean we can enjoy sports? And on you go and on you go. In the daily life, opportunities arise again and again and again to speak about God. And that is because if we believe this is a world that God has made, there is not a single thing that happens in this world that God is irrelevant to. That is, whatever it is you are talking to your kids about, whatever it is you're talking to anyone about, God is not irrelevant to that conversation because it's something that's happening in God's world. If every good and perfect gift comes from above and is to be received with thanksgiving, there is nothing that we are talking about that we can't speak of God's kindness in. This is an area where I think actually we could do well to learn from our brothers and sisters across the globe. I was really struck a few years ago. I went out to Uganda, met some kind of Christians out there at a Bible college. And in other parts of the world, Africa definitely, probably others, Christians are much freer talking about how God interacts with their day-to-day life. We're quite like segmented, like God is relevant on a Sunday and in a home group and a few other times. And we say that's not true, but we act an awful lot like it is. Actually, across the globe, Christians have this bigger, fuller sense that God is at work in the day-to-day of life, because he is. And so that means that in the day-to-day of life, we can talk about the things of the Lord. There is never a point at which God is not relevant to what we're discussing. That is to be done primarily by parents, but this kind of model of just talking about the things of the Lord is to be done by all of us, and not just with children. We're to do this to one another all the time. We're to encourage one another, build one another up. But when it comes to children, ultimately, the key and first responsibility in the world that God has made, in an ideal scenario, is that that training and instruction is done by their parents. That is the ideal God-given pattern. Christian Smith, who is a kind of Christian philosopher, said this: the most important social influence in shaping people's religious lives is the religious life modeled and taught to them by their parents. It's not the only influence, and it's not saying that if the parents mess up that there's no way that they could ever come to know Christ, but it's saying that overarchingly, on average, all things considered, and this shouldn't surprise us because it's what the Bible tells us, the most important influence in shaping young people's religious lives is the religious life modeled and taught to them by their parents. Parents, notice it's both of them. It's not one or other. You can't just teach and not model it. You can't model it but not teach it. It is both. As both are done, overarchingly, on average, you will see your children shaped by that reality. That's an encouragement. There isn't some magic, really complicated thing that we need to do as parents. Actually, the primary thing a parent needs to do is live as a Christian and speak like a Christian. And as you do, that is the most important, most significant thing that shapes the lives of the generation beneath us. There's a danger when you hear things like this, though, where you start reversing the logic and you say, well, if that's true, and maybe for some of us this is personally painful, for others we will definitely know people in this position. Say, well, if this logic is true and so-and-so's child isn't a Christian, that must mean that they have not done this as a parent. That is not the way this works. In the same way that that's the problem that Job's friends face in Job, right? Job's friends looking at Job go, you've suffered, therefore you must have sinned. Applying that same logic to parenting, going, well, your children haven't grown up to know the Lord, therefore you must not have been a godly parent. That is not true. You can do everything, you know, as right as a fallen, sinful human can, and yet ultimately God is sovereign, and his spirit moves where he wills. But overarchingly, on average, as parents speak of the things of the Lord and model the things of the Lord, their children will overarchingly come to know the Lord, because that is God's design. That is God's pattern. See, parents in the home, that is the primary place where the next generation are raised. But it's not the only place, which is why this is not a parenting seminar. We together are to raise the next generation. And as we go to the next concentric circle out, we're going to think about wider family. How do wider family fit into this? Particularly, we're going to think about grandparents. We could do this for aunts and uncles, siblings. We're going to think primarily about grandparents. So you get to Deuteronomy chapter 4, and there's these words in Deuteronomy 4. Teach them, this is talking about the things of the Lord, teach them to your children and to their children after them. See, what's interesting is it doesn't say teach them to your children so that your children can teach them to their children after them. Actually, I think what they have in mind here is that this generation are to not only teach the generation below them, their direct children, but they're also to teach their grandkids. This isn't a two-step thing. If you are a grandparent, you are to be involved in the teaching of your grandkids. That is in part because of the reality of how ancient Israelite households worked, where often the grandparent, parent, and child all live in the same house at the same time. That is not, generally speaking, how grandparents work in our culture. Generally speaking, grandparents, parents, and children don't all simultaneously live in the same house. But it doesn't mean that this desire shouldn't be there amongst those who are grandparents. So some of you in the room are grandparents. For some grandparents, there are reasons why this is really hard to do. You live pretty far away from some of your grandkids. How are you to do this if you live far away? There'll be other grandparents here, or if not here, definitely amongst our church family, where there are painful reasons why you can't really be involved in the life of your grandkids. And so you long to do this, but you just can't. That's really hard. If you're a grandparent, here's the key. Insofar as you're able, try to invest in your grandchildren. Try to live out this Deuteronomy command. Try to be those who are involved in teaching not just your kids, but also your grandkids. I imagine as a grandparent, it's kind of quite easy once your kids have grown up and left home and had their own kids to think, great, job done. I've done my part of reaching the next generation. Now I can put my feet up and leave it to them. That's not right. We're to be involved. We're not to be over-involved. That is, we're not to kind of step in, push your kids out of the way so that you can be first with your grandkids and think, actually, no, they don't know what they're doing. I'm going to control and become the pseudo-parent. Don't step in and kind of overtake the situation. But also don't step back and step away. Don't think this is something that is not relevant for you at all. Don't think there's nothing for you to do. One thing I've been doing this week as I've been thinking about this is reading a book on grandparenting. I think it's really good. It's a book called Grandparenting with Grace, Living the Gospel with the Next Generation. Highly recommend it if you're a grandparent or might be some point soon. And you can have my copy. Not just borrow it, you can have it, because I, God willing, will not need it for a very long time, if ever. Have that if you want to. If not, if someone else beats you to it, I can show you where to get it online. Grandparents, be involved in the lives of your kids and your grandkids. And it's not just grandparents, aunts, uncles, all of that. Be involved in raising the next generation insofar as opportunities with your wider family allow. We thought about parents. We thought about wider family. And now I'm going to think about the church as a whole. Do that in two parts. Firstly, the church in formal ways. And that's in kind of things like Sunday school and youth groups. Because at this point, it might be crazy to say, well, if the responsibility biblically seems to be with parents and with the wider family, why do we even do something like a Sunday school? Why would we do youth group? Why don't we just say, parents, do your job, and if you do, your children will come to know the Lord, God willing, and so the rest of us can just get on with talking to adults, which is frankly easier, and we don't have to spend so much time DBS checking people and putting people on rotas. Why do we do Sunday schools? Why do we do youth groups? Let me tell you a few reasons that aren't the reason. We don't do it just to outsource teaching our kids about Jesus. We don't do it to replace parents because parents can't be bothered and so they can just get someone else to do it for them. We don't do it because parents are just tired on a Sunday and frankly want some free babysitting time. We don't do it so that this room can be nice and quiet so we can all listen to the sermon and the kids can be somewhere out of the way. Some of those may be incidental benefits, but they are not primarily why we do Sunday school and youth groups. No, instead, it is because Psalm 78 seems to put the emphasis on the generation as a whole telling the next generation as a whole. We are all to be involved in this. And the only way to raise the next generation is to help them understand things in a way that they actually can. And so we want to, in as much as we're able, at every opportunity that presents itself, find ways of speaking to the next generation in a way that they can understand the things of the Lord. And Sunday School and youth group provide a great way to do that. It also provides them with chances to make friends at their own age and stage, which is hugely vital. God willing, Sunday School and youth groups done well set people up really well to then come and settle into the life of a church. Done badly, they don't. We'll talk about that a bit in a minute. But done well, they do. And done well, what they also give is they give children role models who are not just their parents. That is, children can see that it is not just their parents who are the only adults that actually believe this stuff. That those messages can be reinforced by more than just mummy and daddy at home. If we're to grasp the importance of things like Sunday school, but also to see that the primary responsibility is on the parents, that does shape some of how we do Sunday school and youth group type stuff. What it means is actually, God willing, in an ideal world, parents and Sunday school and youth group leaders would know each other well. I would know each other well enough to think that we are working together here. It's not parents do their thing over here, Sunday school and youth groups over here. Actually, God willing, those are people who are working together. They are partnering together in seeking to raise those children to know Jesus. There are some practical ways that can work. Sunday school leaders, youth leaders, parents, get to know each other and talk about what your kids are learning and saying in ways that are appropriate and means that kids and youth particularly feel able to actually honestly speak their minds, not thinking that everything they say is going to end up back with their parents. But try and form those relationships so that together you can partner to know what those kids and teenagers are struggling with and to teach them in a way that helps them to know Jesus. The church is to be involved in formal ways. The church is also to be involved in informal ways. In Titus chapter 2, you see that thing, don't you, where the older women are to teach younger women, the older men are to teach younger men. It seems to be in Titus that he's primarily talking about kind of all of them being adults. But there's no reason that we don't start that before the age of 18. It's not like, right, you've hit 18, now you can finally be taught by someone who's older. No, instead, that dynamic of kind of interactions with one another where people learn from those who are older than them can start young, should start young. Because, according to a guy called Mark DeVries, there are two key things that lead to kids growing up and then sticking with their faith, and these are the two. The young people who are growing in their faith as adults were teenagers who fit into one or two categories, primarily overarchingly on average, this is not true for everyone. Firstly, they came from families where the Christian life was modeled in at least one of their parents. Secondly, they had developed such significant connections with adults within the church that it had become for them an extended family. And it's not either or. The ideal is both. That is, we don't just say, well, they've got Christian parents at home, so they don't need other significant connections within the life of the church. No, ideally, God willing, they would have both. That is, by the time that a child is kind of grown up and hits 18, by the time they're kind of at the point where they're starting to strike out and be independent, they both have seen the Christian life modeled at home, and they have formed significant connections with adults in the life of the church. That is the ideal. Because when it doesn't, a really big issue arises, an issue that you see time and time and time again. And the issue goes something like this. A child born into a church, child goes to creche, followed by Sunday school, spends lots of time with kids who are like them and at the same age as them. They hit teenage years, they go to youth group and they do the same. And after the service every Sunday, they talk to their friends from Sunday school, then their friends from youth group. They then go to university, and maybe they go to a university church where there's loads of other students, so other people who are just like them. Eventually, at some point, that person ends up in a church where not everyone is just like them. And often, and this happens time after time, and I've seen it, they literally have no idea how to relate to someone who isn't identical to them. They haven't learned that church is a place where you go to worship God and you go to serve people who are not always like you. They think church is just a place where you go to hang out with people who are just the same as you. And that when it stops being like that, it stops being fun, and what's the point in going anymore? And you see it time and time and time again. It's pretty much what I saw. So I became a Christian at 17. The church I became a Christian in had a really big youth group. But not only did it have a youth group, it also had a kind of separate youth service on a Sunday afternoon. That is, all of the youth from the youth group, basically on a Thursday, they spent time with people who were their age. Then on a Sunday, they spent time with people who were their age. Then they went off to university, and they went to student churches with lots of people who were their age. Pretty much all of them, post-university, stopped going to church. Because all of a sudden, there wasn't a church full of people who were just like them anymore. I didn't see the point. It wasn't fun. a peer friendship group did just the same as the church would. See, that is, if we don't form connections with those who are adults when we're younger, we don't ever learn that church is not just about hanging out and playing with people who are identical to me. Church is about worshiping the Lord and serving people who aren't always like you. And we need to help our kids to grasp that. We need to help the next generation to grasp that. And so, as adults, be involved in the lives of those who are under 18. If you're going to do that in a kind of meaningful, intentional way, do talk to parents so that it's done in an appropriate way. But let me let you in on a little secret. As a parent, I'm pretty sure I can say this with a high degree of confidence, there is no parent in the world who thinks they're absolutely nailing parenting. All the parents laugh, unsurprisingly. There is not a parent I've ever met who's gone, do you know what, actually, I don't really need any more help raising my kids. It just doesn't happen. There is no parent who'd say, do you know what my kids don't need is extra healthy Christian influences. They never say that. Every single parent would love more and more spiritual parents and spiritual grandparents and spiritual siblings and spiritual aunts and uncles for their kids. They would love to see that. So be involved in the lives of those who are under 18. And be intentional about it. On a Sunday, do talk to those who are under the age of 18. Talk to parents. Talk to them about what it might look like for you to be involved in helping them to parent and helping their children to grow, to know the Lord, and to form those relationships outside of just their family unit. If at this point you're utterly terrified because you have no idea how to talk to someone under the age of 18, here's something to encourage you. Here's what Kevin DeYoung says. You don't have to be with it. You have to be with him. If you walk with God and walk with people, you will reach the next generation. See, you don't have to know what game they're playing. You don't have to understand how their phone works. You don't have to understand what films they're into. You don't need to know any of that stuff. What you need to know is the Lord's, and what you need to do is love that person. You don't have to be with it. You have to be with him. If you are one who is walking with the Lord and you are intentionally involving yourself in the life of the next generation, you will reach them. Because you can speak to them of the things that matter most importantly, and you will listen and you will show genuine care for the things that they care about. And if even that feels too terrifying, here's the first step. Just start intentionally praying for the next generation. Let me tell you a story about a lady at a church we were at before. About 25, 30 years ago, she started helping in the creche. And when she started helping in the creche, she made a very simple decision. She said, every time a baby is born in this church, who I know will come into creche, I'm going to add them to my prayer list, and I'm never going to take them off. Every time a child is born in my church, I'm going to add them to my prayer list, and I'm never going to take them off. That church probably has between 4 and 6 babies born a year. She's been working, like helping in the creche for like 25, 30 years. Do the math, you end up with somewhere between about 100 and 200 kids that she has prayed for since the day they were born. Now, she doesn't pray for every single one of them every day, and over time, as that list gets longer, she prays for each of them less often. Isn't that a wonderful thing? A very simple statement, I'm going to add them to my prayer list, and I'm never going to take them off. And there are now 200 children, most of whom are no longer at that church, who are still being prayed for. Some of whom are now adults, some of whom are now serving in churches in lots of other ways all over the country. All of whom are prayed for by that one woman. A simple thing. You don't have to help in creche to do it. You know when a new baby's born in the life of the church. And it might not be that your approach is baby and you kind of follow it exactly that way. But how can you be intentionally involved in praying for the next generation? Because all of us can pray. God's plan for his church is for everyone to be involved in raising the next generation. Some people will be involved in formal ways, helping with Sunday school, helping with youth groups. But all of us are to be involved in informal ways. Because it takes a church to raise a child. And so we're going to go into discussion groups. One very, very simple question. What one way might you be involved in raising the next generation? 5 minutes to discuss that in groups, and then we'll do some interviews. pray. Father in heaven, thank you so much for the next generation. Father, please would you help us to be those who care enough to move towards them. Please would you help us to be those who are involved in raising them. Father, please would we give glory to you in the way that we treat them. We pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen. Brian and Jenny, do you want to come up?